Blog Talk Radio.
Janeway, Fox, Spear, Locke is acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hard. Four drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher, bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak sat, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. With that incredibly awesome and stimulating song, that means it's time for Trek Talking, which means it's Thursday night, which means if you're listening to my voice, we are live, which means you can call 646-668-2433 and join in the fun. And we've got lots of fun planned for you guys tonight. But before we get into that, I just want to let everybody know that I am feeling much, much better than I was on Monday or Thursday of last week. I came down with COVID and last week I could barely talk. Monday, it was, you know, tough, but today I'm feeling much better. And so thank you for all the well wishes. And I just got to tell everybody, it's serious. Take it serious. Get your boosters and do everything you can to protect yourself. You don't want to get this. It's not fun. Although laying around watching Star Trek for 8 days was pretty cool. But the illness itself is not. So please do everything you can to protect yourself and your loved ones from getting COVID. I'm telling you, from my personal standpoint, it's not fun. Okay, I'm going to step off my soapbox now and introduce to you guys my awesome Trekspurts. And we're going to start off with our trifecta from Portland. And we'll start off with David. How are you doing tonight, David?
Eating donuts.
Eating, okay, Homer.
Well, lots of donuts available in this town, brother.
Lots of donuts. And Also from Portland, but hopefully not eating donuts, we have Paul. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, man. I don't have anything exciting to eat right now. I just have a wonderful pint of our pristine and highly enlightening water in front of me. But I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad tomorrow's Friday.
Yes, I hear that. I hear that. And we also have wrapping up our trifecta. With us, as always, is Eric from Portland as well. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Thank goodness it's Trek Talking Thursday. I am ready for it. And I have, conversely, 40 ounces of our fine, pristine Portland water here. But I also have 2 or 3 ounces of whiskey. So we'll have a good podcast.
Whoa.
Well,
is that allowed?
The wine guy has moved on to bigger and better things.
You got to read the fine print, Paul.
I've been missing out, brother. Jeez Louise.
Wow. Well, you know, in the words of Worf, I have to tell you, I must protest I am a merry man because it's Trek Talking Thursday. And wrapping up with my Trek Spurts, not from Portland, but from Las Vegas, is Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. We are still in the midst of the definite roller coaster of weather. I think we hit 99 yesterday. I think we hit around 100 today. But we got wind gusts coming through. We might see 40-mile-an-hour winds. And tomorrow it'll be about 84.
Wow. Well, it is what it is, I guess, right? So, guys, we have a great show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Episode 2. Children of the Comet. That was last week's episode for those of you who are keeping score. Although I have watched tonight's episode 3 times already. Like I said, I have COVID, so I've got nothing else to do. We won't be talking about that episode, until next week, which gives you guys a chance to watch it so you can join in the fun. But we are going to be talking about Children of the Comet. We have a barbecue with Captain Pike. Uhura speaks how many languages? And what actually happened to her family? Why does she join Starfleet? And of course, Hemmer isn't really an Andorian. He's an Ianar. And the shepherds are gone, guarding an ancient comet. And last but not least, it's the power of music, people. We've got so much to talk about. We also have Star Trek birthdays to go over and fan shout outs as well as convention calendar. So we have a lot, and you guys definitely want to stay tuned. And you can go to our Facebook page. In the top of the Facebook page, you'll see Live Long and Prosper. All you do is stop in there, tell us where you're listening from. If you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, that means you're going to be mentioned on a future fan shout out, just like these lucky listeners right now. So Eric, who do you have on your list?
Oh, I have some great folks from all around the world on my list tonight. I'd like to send our very first shout out to Pep Isern from Reus, Spain. Spain, what a great country. You guys make great wine. You have some really beautiful coastlines. So Pep, thank you so much for listening to us, and a big shout out to you. We're also saying hello and sending out a giant kapla to Danny Walker from Darmstadt, Germany. Or that's right there in the center of Europe. Lots of support in Germany for the podcast. Thank you, Danny, for listening to us. We're also saying hello this week to Jose Ricardo from Portugal. Sends a little Portuguese flag icon to us. Hello, Jose. And we really do appreciate your support. I would love to go to Portugal someday. Never been there. Sounds amazing. Also great wine there, too. Also, hello this week to Henrietta Bjergard Nielsen from Denmark. Oh, man, our next family vacation is probably going to be up to Scandinavia, and Denmark is definitely on my list. So, Henrietta, thank you so much for listening to us. And my final fan shout-out this week goes out to Guillermo Saez Kettleberger from Santiago in Chile. Sends us a Chilean flag and a cool icon and a little Live Long and Prosper. So Guillermo, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Charles, passing the torch to you, buddy.
Okay, let's start off with Beth Kane in Silver Springs, Florida. McKenna James, originally from England, grew up in California, now living in Las Vegas, Nevada. McKenna, you ever met anybody from the USS Las Vegas, USS Windrunner, USS Hyperion? We got quite a few ships around. You got to come find us. Pam Andreas from Louisiana. Oh, talking to a friend heading to New Orleans soon for a convention. I said, you better be ready to eat. A lot of good food in New Orleans. Kim Saxbeck from Denmark, EU. Finally, Bob Coilex from San Antonio, Texas. Big, Live Long and Prosper to my group. And how about you, Paul?
Well, my friend, we've got all kinds of fabulous folks spread across the globe this week. First of all, a mighty kapla, and thank you for listening to Aaron Coveney in fantastic Rotorua, New Zealand. That is on the North Island there, a land renowned for much mighty geothermal activity and Maori culture. So wonderful hearing from you, Aaron. Thank you so much for reaching out. In Bavaria, Germany, a kapla to Fran Nova. Fran sends us a wonderful Live Long and Prosper icon there as well. Moving on to the other part of the globe, I'd like to send a great big shout out to top fan Franco Marchese in Sicily. Buonasera, Franco. Buonasera, and thank you for listening. Also, top fan status to our good friend Cialdarcis Costas, who writes to us from the cradle of civilization in beloved Alexandropolis in Greece. Thank you so much for listening, Cialdarcis. We appreciate hearing from you. And lastly, back here in the States, to top fan Robin Davis Fleming in South Carolina. It is great to hear from you all. Thank you so much for listening and letting us know that our zany vocal theatrics are reaching across the globe. Back to you, Uncle Jim. Who are you singing out to today, brother?
Well, we like to say kapla to top fan Ken Malame, who's listening in Brooklyn, New York. Represent.
Brooklyn!
Spent many a summer in Brooklyn, absolutely. Going to Coney Island, having hot dogs and knishes. Pizza in Brooklyn at King's is the best. So absolutely, absolutely love Brooklyn, New York. So thanks for listening to Ken. We also want to thank you to Anthony Barnett in Durham, North Carolina. We want to say kapla to John Fuller, who's listening to us in Ottawa, Canada. And we want to say thank you to Carlos Zigra, who's listening to Peru and sends us the Live Long and Prosper. And thank you so much. Live Long and Prosper to you, Carlos. And last but not least on my list is Alex Tart from Marion, South Carolina. And that wraps up our fan shout-outs for this week. If you guys would like to hear yourself listed in a future fan shout-out, please head over to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond. Spell it all out and drop us a little line. Tell us where you're listening from. Look for a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, and then tune into the next podcast to hear your name. So that wraps up our fan shout-outs. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to send you guys into a commercial with the brand-new just leaked to us theme song for Discovery Season 5. What do you think? Let us know.
Put him in her angel suit. She will never fail to lead her ship on future trips to save the Spirit of Saru with Starfleet through and through. Burn him sure and true. The crew went all the way that day on a three-hour tour. A three-hour tour. Time travel was very rough, and Burnham paid the cost. That day Saru saved a whole darn crew, but Discovery was lost. Discovery was lost. They splashed the ship right down, you see, in the 32nd century, with Burnham and Mr. Saru. Oh, Worshikun and Detmer, the Emperor, with the Doctor and Stamets. Here on Discovery. Hear my tale of Discovery. A crew who's not all fine. They'll have to do the best they can to fit into this new time. Burnham and Captain Saru will do all that they can to take care of their crew, you see, and execute the plan. New races, worlds, relationships, and new technology. Discovery was an ancient ship as primitive as in me. So turn up on each Thursday night right here on your TV. You never know what you will see here on Discovery.
And we're back. What do you guys think about that new theme song for Discovery Season 5? You like it? I love it.
Wow. That's a great theme song, man. And I don't know who that guy is singing it, but he sounds so good.
He's awesome, isn't he? I'm telling you, it's a great song. It really is a great song.
No, but seriously, guys, like from a musical standpoint, that song, I don't know if you count it or not. I actually lost count, but I'm pretty sure that song changes keys about 8 times. So it's actually, like, despite the fact that it's actually a TV jingle that everybody knows, it's a little challenging to sing because you just got to follow those key changes all the way through.
Well, I think it's a spectacular job. I think it's better than I Have Faith That You'll Call.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's a good one. And guys, we're just having some fun with Discovery because that's what Kovich says to Saru, if you guys recall. And so he says, this isn't going to be a three-hour tour. And everyone looks at him like, what? Well, that's where I got that idea from. So anyways, we've had some fun. Now it's time to get right back into the action. We always do our Star Trek birthdays every week. And if we're going to do that, we have to do this.
Chawar, Togana, Lopreza. Chawar, Togana, Lopreza. That was not a Klingon song.
You know, Grumpy Worf says that every week, but we love him anyways. We always start off with our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim. We have 7 members of our Star Trek community who we're remembering this week who would have had birthdays. First on our list is actress Kay Elliott. And if you do not know who Kay Elliott is, perhaps if I said Harcourt, that might clue you in a little bit.
Have you been drinking again?
Have you been
you
drinking again?
You good for nothing!
So Kay Elliott, of course, is known as Stella Mudd from TOS's episode I, Mudd, the wife / reincarnation almost of, no spoilers here from me, but watch the episode if you haven't seen it, it over the last 8 years or something? But seriously, Kay Elliott, fantastic in that episode. And in the very same year she was in that episode, she appeared in a couple of other great TV shows, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and she was also on Gomer Pyle. great actress. and I I just love her in that role. And of course, we get to revisit her just a little bit in the animated series, though I don't know that Kay Elliott actually does the voice there. So anyway, happy birthday to Kay Elliott, who played Stella Mudd in TOS. We're also saying happy birthday this week to actor Barry Atwater, who originated the role of Serac in TOS's episode The Savage Curtain. If you don't know who Serac is, you should probably watch more Star Trek. The father of Vulcan philosophy. He's a great character. Barry Atwater did a great job playing him in that episode. Barry Atwater, also known for many other television shows of the time, including Gunsmoke, Twilight Zone, those sorts of things. So happy birthday to Barry.
Dude, can I add on there just really quick?
Please do.
You guys blew my mind. Who of the two of you does the birthday collages that are on the Trek Talk and Facebook page? Is that you, Jim?
Oh, those are Jim.
No, I get those from StarTrek.com.
Oh, okay. Because one of those things, because of the one that was up there this week for Barry Atwater, it blew my mind, okay? I did not ever know that this was who he was. But it really – I don't know if anyone else is of a old enough vintage to remember Kolchak the Night Stalker, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
That
so
was
before
like pre-X-Files.
Totally. It was the show that inspired Chris Carter to write The X-Files. Amazing show. But before it was a series, it was a made-for-TV movie that got the biggest ratings of any made-for-TV movie ever at the time. It was where Kolchak, there's a vampire in Las Vegas, okay? And Barry Atwater played that vampire. And I've seen that movie like I don't know how many times since I was a kid, right? And he just has the most frightening face in that thing of like pretty much any vampire ever. He's terrifying. And I never made the connection that it was the same guy who plays Peace, Love, and Serac until that collage showed up on the Trek Talking page. So you kind of short-circuited my 1970s rewind watching mind there, dude. But it just blew me away. So shameless plug for the Night Stalker. Sorry to interrupt. Had to get it in there.
I am going to have to watch that. I am unfamiliar with that. And knowing what Serac looks like in that episode of TOS, I can imagine him as a vampire, honestly. Like stone-faced. Yeah,
It was one of the innovative TV movies from that period. I'd be happy to loan it to you.
All right. I'll be over after the show. Thanks, Paul.
Sweet. Bring that scotch with you, if you would.
There you go. All right. So carrying on with our remembrances this week, we're also saying happy birthday to actress Yvonne Craig. And that is definitely a name that should tickle your fancy and make your radar go up because she, of course, played Marta, the beautiful Orion in TOS's episode, Whom Gods Destroy. But that, of course, is not what she is most well known for. And I had no idea that the Orion that I eventually saw in Star Trek was this same person that I had already been following for years as a kid in reruns at 3 o'clock in the afternoon every weekday. Because, of course, Yvonne Craig is most famously known as Batgirl from the original Batman television series. And I have to tell you, as a kid, huge crush on Batgirl. Huge crush on Batgirl.
Holy puberty, Batman!
Yeah, totally. Like, like, it just hit me at exactly the right time in my life, and I was like, ooh, Batgirl. And then, of course, Yvonne Craig just plays that amazing character, Marta. She's also a ballerina, you know, so all that dance stuff that she does there, I mean, that's all legit. She knows what's up. She's just amazing that episode. Did you know that she was also actually considered for the role of Vina in The Cage, which would eventually, of course, go to Susan Oliver? So happy birthday to Yvonne Joyce Craig. We're also saying happy birthday this week to actor Liam Sullivan. Liam Sullivan in Star Trek plays Parham in TOS's episode Plato's Stepchildren. He has fairly short credits here, but it does say he co-starred with Gary Lockwood in 1962's The Magic Sword. Haven't seen that movie, but happy birthday to Liam Sullivan. We're also saying happy birthday this week to actor Eric Holland, who played Ekor in TOS's episode Wink of an Eye. Great episode. I love that one, too. It's not in my top five, but it's right up there in the top 20 for sure. And he was all over the place in television back in the 60s and 70s. We're talking MacGyver, I mean, 80s. He was even, like, into the 90s, West Wing and, you know, the original Wonder Woman. So actor who was prolific in his time, Eric Holland would have had a birthday this week. We're also saying happy birthday to actress Elizabeth Rogers, who played Lieutenant Palmer in TOS's episodes The Doomsday Machine and Way to Eden. She was also the voice of the companion in the episode Metamorphosis. So happy birthday to Elizabeth Rogers. And our final remembrance this week goes out to Andreas Katsoulis, who, of course, is known most famously as Commander Tomalak, the Romulan from TNG, just multiple episodes. What a great character. He also played the Vizian captor, Captain Drennic in the episode Cogenitor. And what's kind of funny about Tomalak, I always wondered why I sort of remembered him in a certain way, and it's because that's the way it was. Out of his four appearances as Tomalak, he actually appeared on a view screen in three of them. And he actually once commented, I've got this great quote here. It says, "I felt much more comfortable when he was an incredible giant on a screen, just a face. Suddenly, when I had to account for everything else, I didn't feel support and nothing was supporting what I was doing. I was happy not to recur unless it would have gone back to a screen character." So he really enjoyed that sort of giant face on a screen, imposing nature of Tomalak. And I have to say, what a great Romulan. So
great actor, man. He was awesome.
Yeah, he was great.
Babylon 5?
Babylon 5 is Ambassador Chakar.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
And recently, since I've been home on my sabbatical, I watched Communion, and he was in Communion as well. I was surprised when I saw him pop up in Communion. So he's
yeah,
all
with
over
Walken, right? Yeah.
Yeah, with Christopher Walken. That's right. He's his friend. They go up to the cabin, and that's where the aliens show up. And he's there when the aliens show up. So yeah, I was like, wow, that's Tomalak.
That's so
yeah.
Awesome.
He's a great dude, man. Done a ton of really good work. Really, he was even in The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. That guy, he's been around forever.
He was. Yep. I remember him. My dad used to watch The Equalizer back in the day, and he was on an episode of The Equalizer, too. Happy birthday to him. So that is it for our remembrances this week, folks. So, Charles, I shall pass the torch on to you.
Well, with three of us, we don't have many current birthdays. But I'll get a few in. Brenda McKee played Reven in TNG's Justice, an early TNG episode. I think I looked on the list and it was like about the 8th episode in season 1. This is one on almost a Jim. Shouldn't you have given this to Eric? I looked up. No, I still get her. Eve H. Renner plays Yulin Inad in TNG's Violation, and Jim missed this one. Also played Jorah Morrell in Boys Remember. Happy 95th birthday, Eve.
Woo-hoo.
That's awesome. I wonder if she'll make the century mark.
Fingers crossed.
And then I got one more. Eaton Muscat. And you're like, who? Eaton played Ensign Haddon in Strange New Worlds Episode 1. He was part of the 3-member crew on the Archer who got captured. So brand new Star Trek alumni joining us. Paul, what about your birthday?
All right, we got a few good ones here, Charles. First of all, happy birthday to Baia Watson, who played on Star Trek Discovery. She was in a series of episodes, May Ahern as an adult. That was the character who was Tilly's friend from, I believe it was junior high school. And we end up seeing her in the series of flashbacks, the way that it was presented. But as an adult, she was portrayed by Ms. Watson. So fantastic work there. Now,
Paul, where else does Bahia show up? In one of your favorite shows, do you know?
One of my favorite shows
that we talked
Mr.
about
Spock.
Last week. That's also science fiction based.
Oh, you must be talking about The Expanse.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm just so focused on Star Trek lately, Eric. It's hard to remember other franchises.
Oh, that's such a good show. But I know.
I will try to remember back there, but I can imagine her on there.
I have to admit the fact I haven't watched a single episode of Expanse yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've read about 3.5 books, just haven't watched an episode yet.
Yeah, I really just, if you're thinking about watching it, what I always tell people with the first season is hang in there, right? Sometimes the first season just seems like it's really all over the place, and you're like, when is this going to come together? And it can be sometimes a little tough. Hang in there, because once you get to season 2, it's on fire.
Yeah, but if it ties in with the books were a little bit in multiple directions anyway. So.
Well, you'll probably be very happy then. I think you'll really dig it. But by season 2, you'll never stop watching. It's so great. Another happy birthday, cruising on down the road here. Now, a couple weeks ago, we were lucky enough to have one of the mysterious visiting Vulcans as a guest star on our Trek Talkin' 2 cadet show on Monday. And he played Vulcan number 1, right? But what about Vulcan number 2? Who played Vulcan number 2? How come Vulcan number 2 didn't get any exciting kudos? Well, we're here to do it tonight, my friend. Actress Jyoti Tiu, who played Vulcan number 2 in that episode. A former Miss Illinois, if I remember correctly. So definitely somebody that we should be paying attention to as her acting career continues to blossom. So happy birthday to you. Also happy birthday to somebody who is going to become, I suspect, a enduring star of the Trek universe. And that actress is the wonderful Riley Alazragui. Please excuse my mispronunciation there, Riley. Happy birthday to you. Who is this actress? Well, she is the voice of Rock Talk on Prodigy and does a fantastic job on that show. I am always saying that I was slow to come around at first to Prodigy, and I always like to admit it when I'm wrong, but that show kicks all kinds of butt. Prodigy is awesome. And to
and
no
I believe,
small degree.
I think she's the youngest Star Trek actress regular that we've ever seen in Star Trek. Well,
yeah, she's like 11, right? I think she's just a very young actress. She's like 11.
Very, very young.
She's not bad.
She's in competition 11? With one girl from Voyager.
Well, there you go. But at least as far as current actors go, I think she's probably got it.
Yep.
Right? But she's great, and Prodigy is great. Really, really interesting stuff. If you have not checked it out yet, don't make the mistake I did and be too late to the program, especially given the line of action figures coming out this fall. Oh, my goodness. They look amazing. Playmates toys. But happy birthday, Riley. And a final happy birthday from me to actress Jennifer Nash, who is famous for being on the Star Trek Next Generation episode, The Inner Light, consistently ranked as one of the top episodes of that franchise, where she played Maribor, who was daughter to the character that Picard played in his time in the Ryzikian, I'm probably mispronouncing that wrong because I don't have notes in front of me on it, bad, Paul Carson, bad, but she was the daughter of Kamen, who was Picard, and Aline, and sister of Batai, Resik, that's what I'm trying to say. She was the on the that inner world that Picard visited of the planet Catan in the village of Resik. So happy birthday, Jennifer Nash, and to all of you other wonderful actors and actresses. Looks like I got all actresses this week. So no actors, all actresses. Though, as they say on the Oscars, all actors are actors, really, regardless, right? That's how you should really refer to them, at least in the SAG Awards. So there we go. Meanwhile, I'm passing the mic back over to you, Jim.
Well, I don't have that many either, only three, and unfortunately, no Klingon. I dug and I couldn't find any Klingon, so no Klingons this week. First of all, I want to say happy birthday to Bill Smitrovich, who played Michael Webb on DS9's Past Tense Part 1 and Part 2. He was in the Bell Riots, and unfortunately, he didn't make it. So happy birthday to Bill. We also want to wish Alexandria M. Selling a happy birthday, who played Talia in Enterprise's The North Star. And the last one on my list is Sean Whalen, who played Zumas in Enterprise's episode Canamar. And that wraps up our birthdays for this week, guys. But don't worry, we have convention calendar coming right up. And we heard Burnham's Island by our very own Eric. And I mentioned Fate That You'll Call. So I'm going to play us in a commercial with Eric's first foray into theme songs, and this is Faith That You'll Call.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but your time is finally here. You can feel the change in your thoughts right now. Nothing's in your way, and they're not gonna hold you down no more. No, they're not gonna hold you down. 'Cause we've got faith that you'll call. We wanna hear what you have to say. We've got faith to believe in just talking today. You've got faith in your fingers. All you gotta do is dial now. You can reach us right now. We've got faith. We've got faith.
And we're back, and I gotta say, Eric, I like Burnham's Island much, much better.
Yeah, well, you're working with better material in general there.
Well, we've heard them both, Burnham's Island and Faith That You'll Call, and who knows, maybe we'll come up with another one for Eric to do sometime down the road, but right now, we only have two. And now it's time for convention. Calendar. And Eric, why don't you get us started off with our convention calendar for this week's podcast?
Absolutely, Jim. We're going back to my old stomping grounds here at the Fan Expo Chicago, July 7th through the 10th at the Donald E. Stevenson Convention Center in Rosemont, Illinois. And I have not been to the Donald E. Stevenson Convention Center, but I have been to the Rosemont Horizon many, many times. I understand it has a name associated with an insurance company now. Great venue, cool town. You should go check out Fan Expo Chicago. We are also watching Kineticon right now, July 14th through the 17th at the Connecticut Convention Center, Hartford Marriott downtown in Hartford, Connecticut. And we are also checking out in that lower southeast corner of the country, MetroCon, July 15th through the 17th at Tampa Convention Center in Tampa, Florida. Paul, what's on your list?
Well, friends, if some mischievous transporter chief just decides on a whim to beam you down in the middle of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, you should grab your tricorder on July 24th and head on over to Congregate 2022 in Winston-Salem's fabulous Marriott facility. You will have an incredible time there. I have a feeling that Congregate is going to be great. We'll find out, though, in a few short weeks. That's a little bit further down the old calendar there. July 29th to 31st, it's above, below, and beyond 2022 at the Drury Plaza Hotel, Broadview version in Wichita, Kansas. So say hello to Dorothy and the Scarecrow while you're there for me. And July 29th to 31st, rounding out the end of the month of July, it's LeakyCon, Orlando, in the Orange County Convention Center, Orange County, Orlando, Florida. So if it's still legal to go to conventions in beautiful Florida, I urge you to go to LeakyCon, where you will have an incredibly fun time. Orlando is one of those magical places where there's all kinds of fun fantasy stuff going on there, thanks to the incredible vibes issued forth from the Magic Kingdom. So who knows who you'll run into if you go there. I hear Star Wars fans and Star Trek fans co-mingle peaceably within the confines of Orlando. Oh, yes.
Really?
Sometimes they even sire offspring together. It's true. So, you know, what happens at LeakyCon stays at LeakyCon, friends. That's all I know. Charles, where is your compass needle pointing at, my friend?
Wow. You might have a few wands show up at LeakyCon. You might have a few wand holders walking in LeakyCon, too. Thinking, was this the Leaky Cauldron? Never know.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Well, let's start off at Fan Expo Boston, August 12th to 14th. Boston Convention and Exhibit Center, Boston, Massachusetts. CocoCon, Chocolatey, September 2nd through 5th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel, Phoenix, Tempe, Arizona. And this next one, I think they're taking over.
Mm-hmm.
The last one on my list is DragonCon, September 1st through 5th. And a deep breath. Atlanta Marriott Marquis, Hyatt Regency Atlanta, Atlanta Hilton, Sheraton Atlanta, Westin Peachtree, all in Atlanta, Georgia. I think they're trying to take over.
Five convention centers in Atlanta at the same time.
And I think Jim missed one in my – I think Jim did miss a convention in my set because it was – early August, I heard it's been pushed to latter August. Jim forgot about the 56-year admission coming up this year in Las Vegas. And that'll be at the, I forgot the date, at the end of August, and that'll be at the Bally's Convention Center this year. 4 days.
Sounds like, or according to the interwebs,
it's... What about the rest of Jim's list?
Well, we have Rose City Comic Con, September 9th through the 11th at the Oregon Convention Center. Where? Portland, Oregon. What is going on
baby.
In Oregon?
We're going,
what
baby.
Is... Wow. What is the deal with Oregon? Everything's in Oregon.
I'm telling you,
I gotta move
the
there.
Comic scene in this town is off the hook. You don't understand how much comic stuff happens in Portland. It's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah,
I think I gotta move
here.
There.
The fan population. It's like if you're a toy collector, forget it, because it's like folks are camped out in front of like every Target and Walmart when they open every morning, right? And so by the time you go in there, if you're not there at opening, you're getting nothing, because they have been swooped at opening by just the locust plague of fans that is Portland, man. It's crazy.
So we know what Paul's going to be when Playmates come out.
Yeah, when the new Prodigy figures. They'll have his tent right out there.
I will be pre-ordering on the fabulous internet to guarantee my my lack of frustration. And that's how it's got to be these days, man. But, yeah, that's a heck of a con. And I sure hope that COVID is, like, settled down to a dull roar by then. We got till mid-September, which is pretty good. But we got to go, man. We got to represent Trek Talking and just our own crazy enthusiasms at RC. CC, it is going to be nuts.
Yeah, I sent you like what, 500 business cards?
I have business cards. I have refrigerator magnets. I got all kinds of good stuff. So Rose City Comic Con is going to get blanketed with Trek Talking stuff.
Sweet.
People will know
if you stand out front with your bat lift, people can come up to touch it, and you can say, you can touch it, but you got to take a business card.
Well, I have to tell you that I have been in my Starfleet uniform. I am most often mistaken for Commander Riker. People come up to me and they're like, you know, you look just like William Riker. I'm like, yes, I know.
Are you my anxiety?
Yeah. But I wear the four pips. So I can't help myself.
Well, you're the captain of the Titan.
Of course. There you go. I'm Ladder. Even though I also kind of mix and match, I wear that TNG uniform and my Discovery badge. But I am digressing big time now. Let's get on the convention calendar.
So we are also following Multiverse 2022, October 14th, 15th, and 16th at the Westin Atlanta Perimeter North in Atlanta, Georgia. And the last one on my list is Astronomicon, November 4th, 5th, and 6th at the RIT Inn and Conference Center in West Henrietta, New
Great
York.
Great name, man.
So,
say that name again, Jim.
Yeah, you don't want to miss that. Astronomicon.
Yeah,
sounds
that's
interesting.
Awesome.
Very, very
cool.
Interesting.
Definitely sounds like an evil transformer for sure.
All right, guys. You waited long enough, and now it's time. We're going to talk about Strange New Worlds, Children of the Comet. But
Nurse Chapel, get in here.
It's okay, buddy.
Oh, God.
Hit this man with a high.
Sorry, guys. I'm still having a little bit of COVID going on here. We're going to take you to a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to dive right in, and we're going to take you to commercial break with something, I think, familiar if you've hung around the show long enough.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life. And new civilizations. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
And we're back, and I hope you guys recognize that song. You should. If you're hanging around listening for the next segment, of course, that's the theme song for Strange New World. And I have to say, I'm very impressed with the music. Yes, I am. Particularly the end of that theme song, because they don't have that. What was her name, Eric? We had her birthday not too long ago. The woman who sang Star Trek. I can't remember her name.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, Soprano. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't have it on the tip of my tongue, but yes, fabulous.
Me neither.
Voice.
So this takes place before. Yep.
You know what they did? Instead of the voice, you know what they did?
That's what I was just getting to.
Go ahead.
Yep. They didn't use the voice, but if you listen to the end of that song, you can hear, you can feel the transition from that to the human voice that will be used on TOS. I think it's a great setup and a great transition.
It's like a theremin, right? Isn't that what it is?
It is a theremin, yep.
That's what I was doing. It's a theremin.
Were you talking about Luli Jean Norman? Is that the...
Yeah, that's her.
That's her.
Yeah, okay,
in 2005, cool. Unfortunately. But she did live to be a ripe old age of 92, which is pretty sweet.
That's sweet. I'll take it.
Yeah. So the music has really impressed me so far for Strange New Worlds, particularly that opening theme song. It invokes Star Trek.
Well, it's your boy. It's Jeff Russo, man. And, you know, the thing is that it's got the what I call adventure energy to it, like that dun-da-da-dun-da-da-da-dun, like that kind of rhythm sort of propels you through the credits and actually, like, it adds a lot of energy to that theme music. So I love that it's got, of course, the recollections and stuff, and it is a little different from previous Star Trek themes. Like, when you think of Star Trek themes from the, you know, late 20th century, they're sort of epic. They have this kind of, like, Voyager is very like da 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 da, you know, and it moves really slow and kind of has this like contemplative sort of feel to it. This one is all adventure. It's like dun da 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 dun. Oh yeah, I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna discover some stuff. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's like you're you know, voyaging across the high seas essentially.
Yep.
And that the way they wrap that up too, it's like when you hear it and it has those four big crescendos that build on top of each other, right? And then it just finally just explodes, like you're going to warp or something. I'm not sure what it evokes, but it's just very climactic, if you will. And really, that's a great piece of orchestration. Really, really unique.
And then the little recall with the theremin at the end is very nice, because, of course, it like evokes that, you know, it evokes that like soprano voice without
it,
like,
says,
replicating
it. Screams
it.
Late 60s, man,
it
which
does.
Is what the tip of the hat is. So it's perfectly appropriate, I think. It's great, man. But another great choice by the team involved in this show.
Now, the opening, before the show starts, we have the Enterprise flying around the logo, and then it says Star Trek. Is that going to be the new logo for the Star Trek universe?
Yeah.
Are we going to see that before every Star Trek show from now on? Is that like the
I think
new logo?
So. I think going forward, I think they're launching that with this series. So we probably won't see it again on the other series until their next seasons happen with like Prodigy and whatnot. But to me, it's like very similar to what they're doing with the Star Wars franchise over on Disney Plus. They have kind of a you know, universal
faces
logo, if you will,
of
that tips its hat
and
to everything.
Bots and stormtroopers, which they constantly update too with every series, which is kind of cool.
Exactly. So I think this is it. And I think they did a great job with this. It's great. I love the diversity that's implied by the choice of the logo too, which is great.
Yeah, the big rainbow thing behind the ship
right.
is so cool because of that, and also because of the whole like rainbow warp effect from the movie. I just love all of those little colors.
Nice choice. You know, not playing to the cheap seats at all. You know, very much broad and putting it out there, which is great. So really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping that when now I think Prodigy is going to be the next thing we're going to see in another 7 weeks when Strange New Worlds ends. I think Prodigy is next up on deck, right?
No, I think the next one pretty close might be Lower Decks.
It's one or the other. We're going to see them. We're either going to see Prodigy and then Lower Decks, or we're going to see Lower Decks and then Prodigy. Those are the next two that are on deck. I'm not sure what order, but those are the next two we'll see. And hopefully we will see that Star Trek logo before every Star Trek show. Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way to kind of unify the franchise, you know, say, hey, these are all under the same umbrella, which is, like Paul was saying, what Star Wars is doing right now.
Right. They definitely need that, and this is a good step. So, guys, this is the part of the show, if you've listened before, if you've followed us on Facebook, we're really into the fan thing because we're fans, obviously, just like you guys. So rather than just hearing us sit around talking about what we think about Star Trek, we like to involve you guys in it as much as possible, which means our phone number is open right now. The phone lines are standing by, 646-668-2433, and to give us a call and tell us what you thought about Strange New Worlds. But if you're afraid to be on the radio, or you're not near a phone, or you're not listening live, that's fine, because you can go to our Facebook page at Trek Talkin' and Beyond, and every week I cough. I put a post on Facebook and ask you guys, what did you think about last week's episode on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best? And we read back your responses and give your scores before we do ours to see how close we come to what you guys think. So, Eric, what did our Facebook fans think about Children of the Comet?
Well, fan Steve Bellinger gave it an 8. He said, quite good. I think I'm going to like Strange New Worlds. I am an original Trekkie who does not like most of the new Trek out there. I actually didn't want to like Strange New Worlds, but gave it a chance, and I'm impressed. So thanks, Steve. Michael Morris says a solid 8. This show feels like an updated version of what TOS was going for. Also, great to see Cadet Uhura's story and learn more about her. Totally agree, Michael. Thank you. Wes Huntington gave it a 7. Felt like a step backwards after a great pilot, too much like the Orville. Yes, inspired by Star Trek and not like Star Trek. The Shepherds reminded me of the Krill in the Orville. So thanks, Wes. Daniel Carey kicked it up a notch and gave it a 10 for one reason. I love how they are character building. This really gave a great view into Uhura's story. There were a lot of other great things, but this alone is worth a 10. Thanks, Daniel. April Ju said a 10. Love this format. Episodic adventures. I love long story arc, which Discovery did well, but this is closer to TOS. Great episode and awesome Uhura backstory. Thank you, April. John McCann said another 9.5. Not perfect, but almost. Top fan Jim Nelson said a 10. I think Strange New Worlds is on track to be the best Star Trek series ever made. All the other series had an unknown future, and we got acquainted with the characters as we went along. Strange New Worlds contains characters who obviously look different that display things in their personalities we're already familiar with, like Uhura's singing or Chapel's developing interests in Spock. Mm-hmm. And nostalgia kicks in instantly. I agree, Jim. That gives us the love factor right away. Thank you. Alan Baubrick said, I give it a qualified 7.7. I'm glad they didn't portray Uhura as a giggling, silly person this week. I felt the story bogged down at one point. Number one so far needs work. At the end of the episode, it was a little better, but she doesn't exude a first officer vibe, at least for me. I like the Enar engineer. The helms person is growing on me. Is it just me, or does Sam Kirk give anyone a Guy Fleegman, Sam Rockwell and Galaxy Quest vibe? Alan, hadn't heard that one before, but I like where you're going. Thanks for your comments. Karen Garr gave it a 9.5. Delivery could have used a little work, but the character interactions, intelligent exposition, etc., and especially how they highlight something we've always known and appreciated about Uhura was just so freaking well done. Interactions feel authentic, even if we're still at the nervous social stage. The dialogue is perfectly delivered, and no one can tell me this show gorgeous. 3 exclamation points. Totally agree, Karen. And finally, top fan Tom Patrick gave it an 8. I was confused by Spock suddenly in a shuttle and doing what in the asteroid? Was he heating it? Pushing it somehow from the inside? I got lost there. But the character of Uhura more than made up for it. We finally, after 50 years, learned about her personal life, and she was able to showcase her unique talents and specialties. So, guys, we averaged that all out, and we came up with a Trek Talking fan score on this episode of 8.8. So that is a pretty respectable score, a full point below what the fans rated the premiere, which was an astounding 9.8. I don't think we've ever seen that for anything in the franchise except maybe First Contact, if I go back and look, if I found the numbers. Actually, that's a 9.7. So there you go. So the premiere was 9.8. Children of the Comet, 8.8. Still very respectable and some very nice and detailed comments from our fans. So thank you guys so much. It's a pleasure to share your comments on the air.
So the fans gave it an 8.8, and we're going to find out what we thought about it. We're going to do things a little bit differently this week from now on, I think, because. So when we come back from this break, we're going to dive right in.
Trek Talking, all things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30, all hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back, and we're talking about Strange New Worlds, Children of the Comet, which is episode 2 of season 1. And David, how you doing, buddy? Finish up those donuts?
I'm adopting the donuts.
Oh, you're all done? Were they good? Did you enjoy them?
Yeah.
What kind did you have?
It was an apple cider fritter.
Oh, my favorite. Oh,
wow.
They were so good.
And followed it up with some...
Have you ever heard of a company called Blue Star Donuts? That's where it came from.
Oh, Blue Star, one of the great donut places in Portland.
Interesting. So, David, you're up first. And what I've decided to do, have a little bit of fun with this thing, is I watched the episode upteen times, and then I'll pull out 5 scenes that I think each one of my co-hosts might find something interesting to talk about in that particular scene. And what this does is this keeps you guys on your toes, so you don't know exactly what you're going to have to talk about, which keeps things, you know, improv, which is great. It gives our listeners an opportunity to hear some sound bites from this particular episode if they haven't seen it. And it gives us an opportunity to just talk about different things without just me having to run off with diarrhea of the mouth. So that's what we're going to do. And you, my friend David, get the first clip. Are you ready? I've entitled this clip Languages.
What's that you're humming, cadet?
Sorry, bad habit. It's an old folk song from my village in Kenya.
I've visited Lake Simbi-Nyima several times. It is achingly beautiful there.
I grew up just a few miles away.
Really? You know, the Enterprise only gets a handful of cadets a year from Starfleet. You gotta be pretty impressive to make the cut.
Thank you, sir.
I hear you speak 12 languages.
37.
Okay, wow.
In Kenya, we have 22 native languages. I found early that if I wanted to be understood, it's best to communicate in someone's own tongue. So I learned them.
Easy as that.
For me, sir, yes.
So, David, the first thing setting up this scene is they're at a dinner party with the captain, and the captain's making barbecued ribs, which I found interesting. For some reason, I thought that everybody was like vegans in the future. I didn't know they still ate meat. So I found that interesting. The fact that the captain was actually cooking, which isn't the first time we saw him cooking in his cabin in the first episode. He's not using a replicator. He's cooking everything by hand, and Hemmer's chopping up the carrots and things. So he's doing things old school, which says a lot about the captain's personality. But in this particular clip, we're centering on Uhura. And what did you think about this interaction and about Uhura and what she said?
Well, I think it was a great way to introduce not only a legendary character, but just a character in general for a background story that is on Uhura, who we all apparently never knew what had happened back in the day when she had joined Starfleet. And since this is what she had mentioned over and over was her first mission, I think it was a great way of opening up her backstory and letting everybody know of how much potential she has going forward. And I hope they really get into not just her, but all the characters eventually to see how they progress as it gets closer and closer to TOS. I actually thought it was really good. I really enjoyed that scene, and overall the episodes were awesome. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I thought it was Uhura. Now, I don't want TOS people to start sending hate mail and whatnot, but I feel that Uhura, she was never really like none of the characters really on TOS were developed. One of our fans mentioned this in the comments that Eric read. In this particular episode, we learn more about Uhura in 5 minutes than we did in 55 years. And to me, that's great. You know, we learn, you know, that she ran away and joined Starfleet. She was living with her grandmother, who was in Starfleet, and her grandmother, you know, talks stories about Starfleet. So Uhura joined Starfleet. We learned that her parents taught at the University of Kenya, and both her parents and her brother died in a shuttle crash. So we learn more about Uhura at this dinner to just fill in the backstory of this awesome legendary character. And like Pike said, you know, they only get a few cadets every year and you have to be good. And I believe that it's Spock that says there were thousands and Uhura was chosen. So we know that she's good. We know that she's the best of the best. It's like Top Gun, you know, she made it and she's got to be good to be there. And they never really told you just how good she really is. Now, J.J. Abrams, I think, did a good job of building Uhura in the Kelvin Universe movies, where, you know, she's a badass, she kicks ass, and she speaks all these languages, and, you know, we got an idea of how good she was in those movies. But up to that point, we didn't really know much about her until this particular scene. Anybody else want to add anything about this scene before we move on? Eric?
Let me do a jump in a little bit. Prior to this scene, we get something that we occasionally get, which I think was unique in this episode. You have an opening log. Whose opening log was it?
It was Uhura's.
It wasn't the captain's. It wasn't number one. It was Uhura's log. So I like the fact we started off with her in that. And I like how it's like, oh, I got to be in my dress uniform. She walks up the pilot, and she's up in casual dress, like, okay, this isn't a formal event. I should go change. Nope, you're going to be late for the party. Okay, there's a little bit of hazing in there. But that's what happens to cadets. Cadets do get that hazing. I remember an occasion in the Navy. It wasn't as much hazing my first time on ship, but we had a special hazing event the first time anybody passed over the international dateline. There's a big event in there, and there's some real hazing in there, and that's tradition. So I like the fact that it's like, oh, there's an Enterprise bingo for cadets. Okay, yeah, there is a joke that cadets do get hazing, but they do get, oh, I need to do stuff on the ship. Oh, I'm trying to work on my bingo card and get those little things done. I think it really gave us a good perspective, not only of her, but it gave us a great perspective of a new cadet who's not even gotten to ensign yet, and what their life is like on ship and missions. Mm-hmm. I don't think few cadets are probably real confident and ready to be perfect on their first mission.
Absolutely.
Most people are going to be a little hesitant, and she was showing what a real cadet is going through.
That is
I like that perspective.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Charles. And I love the interaction with her and Spock attempting to give her pep talks, you know, and he gives her the first one and it sort of fails. And then he comes around and he gives her the second one. And she's like, yes, that one was better. So there's a lot of character development here. One of the things I really appreciated specific to her language stuff is that, you know, when she does go to that dinner party, which doesn't that just feel, first of all, like something, like if you were to actually hang out with Anson Mount, you'd probably show up at his house and that is exactly what you'd get. You'd get him in his apron, like at the barbecue, making the food. And as
sign me up, I'm there. Sign me right up.
It sounds like a blast. But when she's at that party, you know, she's talking to Hemmer and Spock. I love the fact that she very casually just sort of greets them or says something to them both in their native languages, just one right after the other, boom, in passing, like it's no big deal. So not only does she say she speaks 37 languages, but she very casually busts out a couple of, like, you know, Federation languages right there. And you can tell by the performances of the actors that it takes them aback, right? They're like, oh man, somebody just spoke to me in my native language. And it's the same thing in real life. Like if you're a person who typically interacts with somebody in English, for example, but you interact with somebody whose native language is Spanish, and all of a sudden you greet them in Spanish or you say something to them in Spanish, that there's like a special connection that happens at that point. And I feel like this is one of those same things where Uhura forms a special connection with both Hemmer and Spock. In fact, remember after she greets Hemmer in his language, he says, I like her, you know, something like that. So it's like this language connection is a very strong connection. So
that's cool.
I can see what like propels her through Starfleet, even though she's unsure of herself. It's this special power she has that people are just like, hey, I want to hang out with you. You know what's up. So, yeah.
I got something to add to that, actually, the whole language thing. I mean, if she was speaking to them in languages, wouldn't the translator pick it up and just back into English or something? I don't know. That whole thing
there's a little bit to me, there's still some questions about how the translator works. Like, I feel like it's on sometimes and it's off sometimes, and
I think that in technobabble terms, I think that in TOS. And in Strange New Worlds, they don't have the dermal translators yet. And they're relying on the audio translator like they would have on the bridge. I don't think they walk around with the dermal translators like the Ferengi have on Deep Space Nine that translates everything. That would be my take on it.
Right.
Yeah,
so
that would be
my take. You have to be on the bridge and things are only automatically translated on the bridge.
That would be my take. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but... Star Trek brain, that's what my Star Trek brain is telling me. You know, because on Deep Space Nine, they make it abundantly obvious. They tell you they have translators installed under their skin that translate every language for them into their language. And okay, that's cool. But this is a little bit before that. So that's my assumption. So, and I'm sticking to it. So, Eric, are you ready for the next one?
Sure.
You're up next.
Man.
Yeah. All right, I've entitled this soundbite, What a Coincidence.
Cadet, DK seems to be reacting to your voice.
Music. It responds to music.
Anything?
Nothing from the landing party, but I found a possible signal coming from the comet itself.
What kind of signal? Computer, identify this song.
Vamovamba, a traditional song from Earth, originating in Kenya.
That cannot be a coincidence.
All right, Charles, Eric, what do you think?
Ooh, man, that's so great. I mean, I think the most obvious parallel that any good sci-fi fan kind of feels here and can't help but feel are connections to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and that melody that becomes the key to connecting with the aliens that are out there. And even the melody they choose has some of the same intervals here. So you hear Uhura sing this, and it's not the Close Encounters melody, but it's a little evocative of it to me. But I'm not distracted by that. I don't, you know, it doesn't pull me out of the moment because, first of all, the singing itself is absolutely beautiful, very crystal clear, very in tune. Like from a musician standpoint, it is spot on. And then, of course, it becomes the key to communicating with what's going on inside the comet, which is a callback to, I think, several iterations of science fiction and Star Trek. I mean, most recently, we're talking about the season wrap of season 4 of Discovery, which, of course, was all based on communicating with aliens in a foreign way that involved lights and that sort of thing. Here we get the audio connection. And what better way to show how amazing Uhura is than to connect not only the linguistic part of her skill set, but the musical part of her skill set. So I just really like that. I love that Pike gets to flex just a little bit and say, oh yeah, I've been to that region of Kenya a bunch. It's really beautiful. Like that shows him as a, he's the white guy running the ship, but he is very connected to the cultures and the people around him. And, you know, I think that shows up again at the end of the episode when he's calling out all the people that he's thinking about, but just fantastic scene to me. And I love, of course, the musical connection. I know why I got this one. And I love the connection back to old school sci-fi with the Close Encounters thing. So yeah, great scene. And I loved it as the kind of core of how they figure out how to get out of their jam in this episode.
And we all know that Uhura, she sang several times through Star Trek. In fact, she did a fan dance in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, my all-time favorite movie. And so the fact that they're establishing that early, I think it's just reinforces that strength that this character has, which is great.
Yeah, the fan dance is pretty famous for her. The one that I always think back to, and I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to pull the name of the episode out right now, but it's the one, is it Alana Troyes maybe, where she is singing along with Spock while he plays his lyre, his Vulcan lyre. And that to me was just so special because you get him playing his cool instrument, which is an alien thing. You get her voice and it's like a mashup, right? She doesn't sing in Vulcan or anything like that. She's like singing Vulcan stuff, but like with English words. And I don't know, just really like that scene. And so the fact that they've kind of recalled that singing prowess with this new Uhura character is very special for me. It's a less adventurous Uhura. You know, you're right. The J.J. Abrams one is like action adventure Uhura, you know, this to me is like, we get to really develop this character and show why she becomes the person that we see in TOS Uhura.
I love it. I love it.
You guys also notice the sound, the voice for the computer?
The voice for the computer.
Yeah, when Pike says, computer, what's the name of the song? And the voice pattern that came over the speaker, the speakers. Did it sound very similar to the original voice for the computer? For like TNG?
No, it was not Major Barrett. It was a different voice. Major? It was not her. I'm not sure who it was. I haven't looked that up, but it was not Major Barrett. It was definitely a different voice.
Yeah.
Because it sounds very awfully familiar. I was like, wow.
Now, Paul, are you ready to take the center seat? Yep. You ready for your challenge?
Hold on, Jim. Hold on, Jim. You didn't ask anybody else. As I put the code in for the second time, one of the immediate things I thought about when they started to do this one was the quote, "The power in that, people," reminding me back to Tilly when they started using math and music for communications. We did a little bit in Discovery, but those of us that got into the novels, if you go back to Way of the Stars, that was one of her things that she studied in school and was able to use, is using math to communicate and into music. And it's a funny scene seeing her sitting there seeing old MacDonald, her group of strange aliens, and they're backing her up and following right along because they don't have any translators. So I can sit there right in and have a great storyline in there. So it reminded me a little bit of Tilly. But really the fact that, like, okay, we don't have, there's not all these standard languages. Let's find different ways that are non-standard languages, but there's still ways that we can communicate with aliens. The translator won't do everything.
I agree completely. And, Paul, you ready? You ready to take the center seat, buddy?
Make it so, my friend.
Okay, we're going to swing the spotlight right over to Portland. We're going to shine it on Paul. And here's your clip. It's a clip entitled The Shepherds.
Hail them on screen. This is Captain Christopher Pike of the Federation Starship Enterprise. Who are you and why are you attacking our vessel?
We are the Shepherds.
Really?
Tell the Universal Translators processing it.
We escort the Harneet.
The comet?
The Harneet is far more than a comet. The Harneet is one of the ancient arbiters of life.
Okay.
If you tamper with it again, we will not hesitate to destroy you.
All right, Paul, what do you think about the Shepherds and them defending the Comet of Life?
Well, you know, I thought they were handled really well. This is really one of our first introductions to a unique, new to this series, alien species on here, and I thought they did a great job with it. From two different aspects, Jim, I think in terms of like the writing and the story, it's great because they're running into something. This is basically, it's like a test of not only their problem solving and their ability, but it's a test of their ability to be diplomatic, right? How do you solve a problem when the other people that you are working, you know, encountering, have a very different ethos than you do, right? They see things very differently. They don't identify things like you do. They don't believe things the same way that you do. And so I think right now in particular, that's a pretty important theme to be working at. And also in this case as well, for those that you are discovering are infinitely stronger and more powerful than you are. They can outshoot you and they can outrun you and they're just generally more powerful. So it's a little humbling, but you have to be perhaps a little bit more authentic in terms of dealing with them. And I liked the way they portrayed the captain of the Shepherd's ship, just because he's not, you know, it's real, given the fact that, yes, it's almost like a quasi-religious society that they are depicting, right? But they don't portray that as like hokey or that he's just purely powered by dogma. The captain seems very intelligent, very able to express himself, and very firm in his convictions. And I think that comes across really, really well. It was really interesting, right, in terms of that whole dynamic. And he's, you know, certainly willing to listen, but he's not an completely unreasonable jump up and down guy either. His first, one of the first things he says to Pike is, "I assume you are a reasonable man," right? Which is kind of setting the stage for their discourse going forward. So I thought it was really well done. And the other reason I think it was really well done is, again, this is our first look at a unique new alien species, really. It's unique to Strange New Worlds. And I thought that they depicted him wonderfully. If you haven't had a chance to look at it yet on the videos for the Ready Room that Will Wheaton does, right, they go behind the scenes and they show how this particular alien was executed. And they really tried to shy away from any computer-generated stuff on here, right? The bulk of what they did involves an actor, a guy named Tom Marriott, who plays the captain of that ship. And what they did with him is they put him in a series of makeup appliances, right? Now, when you see the jaw and his mouth move, that's Tom Marriott, right? That's him speaking and acting. But the upper half of his face and his head and the eyes is a sophisticated makeup appliance, right? That's powered by like hydraulic cables, kind of the kind of thing Carlo Rambaldi used to do for, like, you were mentioning Close Encounters earlier, Eric, that kind of thing, where it's a really elaborate makeup piece that he's wearing on there. But he is acting. It's a performance. And you get that feeling of reality that comes from having something tangible as a practical effect on the set, right? Even though you're looking at him on a video screen, right, on the main viewer, he comes across really impactfully, and the eyes are very strong, and it really worked really, really well. I was like, that's a unique new alien, and I like that. I thought that was way more effective than half the alien species that we saw in the JJ movies, or some of the ones we started to really run into too many variations of the crinkly forehead on, like, Deep Space Nine, right? I mean, this is basically using modern tech for effects technology, but doing it kind of embracing the idea of the old school and the physical depiction of having an actor be first and foremost where the character comes from. It changes things, and it makes it a lot more compelling. So kudos to you, Tom Marriott, if you're out there, and to everybody else behind the scenes on here. Well written and really well executed. So I thought this was a great first contact with an alien species on Trek, really. So very, very unique. I say first alien. I mean, the aliens we saw in the premiere were really just kind of variations of that, you know, humanoid type thing. This is an alien, you know, is what I'm trying to convey. A much different kind of alien.
Paul, I think that a lot of that is not only the look of him and the way that he was shot from a video standpoint, like you sort of get this fuzzy video of him, but also it's his actual syntax when he speaks too, right? Like it's very matter of fact. And in fact, there's a comment by one of the people on the bridge about, well, that's how the Universal Translator is translating what he's saying, you know, Shepard.
Yeah.
To me, that was part of the thing that made them alien, was that the Universal Translator was literally just kind of translating almost like simpler, more fundamental phrases versus something that was nuanced, which you might get if you were actually speaking the same language, you know.
Right. It's looking for like a spoken equivalent, right?
Right,
like
right.
Shepard is its label, right? That's what it finds and it pulls that out.
And in TNG, when a Romulan speaks Romulan, it sounds exactly like English, right? It like word for word sounds like the syntax is perfect, the grammar is perfect, the reference, like the cultural references are perfect. Here you get an alien that doesn't even have the same common cultural frame of reference, right? Like everything about his race's existence has to do with the maintenance of this thing that's flying through space. And that is just not something that Pike can like immediately grasp. It takes him a minute to kind of get there. Which I really like.
I really think that the writing supports that a lot there too, just because at the end, right, when things are resolved and that we've kind of found consensus and whatnot, it's like the captain doesn't say, "And so we will part as friends." He's like, and so we will not part as enemies.
Enemies, right?
He doesn't really suddenly become this softer, gentler guy. It's more of like he's still very much a formidable person that you come on there. And my one thing is that I hope they can stay away from in the writing is to have Pike's first reaction be kind of Valley Girl like that, like where he just goes, really? Like, you know, it's too contemporary, guys. That's a way, it's anachronistic to have those kind of contemporary references, especially for your main, you know, competent commanding officer to have him be talking like that, to go,
yeah.
Really? It's just too contemporary. So let's shy away from the UPN generation lingo if we can, and make him more, you know, mature if we can. I think he can be likable and contemporary and funny, but let's not have him be that colloquial. I don't think that works out so well. But.
And it seems immediately dismissive too when he says stuff like that. So,
yeah, so I know they're trying to appeal to a broad audience, and that's a hallmark of Akiva Goldsman's writing, right? He always likes to make things super contemporary, like he's writing the way people talk at your local Starbucks, right? He wants it to be really accessible to the young audience, but sometimes, dude, you got to pull back a little bit on that thing. But, you know, I mean, Chapel's a good example of that right now. She talks super contemporary. All right, so it doesn't seem like there's the distance of future idioms that's come in there at all, where you kind of have them speak in a little bit more of a generic way. Not generic, but just more of a neutral way. So it's just a little too – my point is, you watch this in 10 years, 15 years down the road, the captain saying, really? That's going to seem really dated, you know, which is a mistake. They always were able to avoid that on Next Gen, but I know on the – on the Paramount Plus series, they seem to embrace, and I think that's Akiva's hand at the tiller there. So we'll see. You get other writers in there, hopefully not so much. But that is the tiniest of quibbles, pals. I mean, I would rate this episode a 10 just because of all the components coming together. And, you know, my rating would come holding it up against everything else I've seen on Paramount Plus since they have started doing Star Trek, right? That's what I would grade you against, right? And so I give it a 10. For that, I want to see more new exciting aliens. Super anxious to get to know Mr. Hemmer better. I think, speaking of aliens, he's going to be fascinating to spend some time with. So hopefully more of that soon. But just great stuff. I'm excited for where they went. But go find that video on this. You can find it on the any of those Will Wheaton videos from last week on Ready Room, and you can see the behind the scenes stuff. It's awesome. Really, really cool how they put this together.
Well, that's a great segue, because speaking of Hemmer, guess what, Charles? The spotlight is swinging to you, and that means it's Hemmer time.
Can I help?
No.
You have offended Hemmer, our new chief engineer.
No offense intended. I was raised to offer help to anyone with a sensory impairment.
That word again.
Sir?
Impaired. A human in my condition might consider themselves impaired.
Hemmer may not be able to see, but his other senses compensate.
Compensate? They are superior.
I've read that, among many things, the Enar have a form of precognitive ability.
I knew you were going to ask that.
Because you sensed my question before I asked it?
Because everyone always asks that.
Right.
You telegraphed your throw telepathically.
As was my intention, to illustrate.
This is a hazing thing, isn't it? You guys are screwing around? Aite Ajave, Hathunath Kaimi. Sildeshakup. I think I need a drink.
I like her.
Indeed.
All right, Charles. So this is our introduction to our new chief engineer, Hemmer. And obviously, he's not an Andorian. He's an Enar. So what do you want to say? What do you think about this scene? And what do you think about Hemmer?
I've seen a sneak peek into this week, and I gather we're going to see a little more of Hemmer. He's a character I definitely want to learn more about. He's somebody we a species we don't know a lot about. And they seem to be doing a good job of kind of shaping him out in this scene, but kind of making it like, okay, I think it was a question of, was he just hazing Uhura, or was that just how he acts? And I'd be interested to see what kind of personality he has. But I think he's going to be an interesting character. I want to see more building on him. I definitely want to see more building on him. What makes him who he is? Yes, we have had one of the visually impaired Star Trek members. And I think it'd be interesting to see how he used his abilities, because he wasn't truly blind, but he could see with help through the spectrum, how Hemmer uses his ability to move around and to do his tasks. So I look forward to seeing what they do with this character. He's going to be an interesting character. I'm almost seeing this character, if they do just enough for him, I could picture a novel coming out trying to explain the backstory. What do you think?
Well, I just watched the episode. Like I said, I've been home with COVID, so I've been watching lots and lots of Star Trek. And I just watched the Enterprise episode, The Enar. And in there, Shran says that the Enar were considered a myth and that they weren't real. They were like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. And it wasn't until 50 years ago when they discovered an Enar colony and they became a reality. So it was, you know, it wasn't too long ago that the Enars were discovered on Andoria. And they're all blind, and they all have a telepathic ability to read your mind, kind of like the Talosians did. Only they will not enter your mind without your permission. That's what the head Enar tells Shran. Irregular Andorians don't have that ability, but the Enar do. And they can read your mind, read your thoughts, if you allow them to. Whether or not they will violate that, I don't know. It's not made explicit in that episode, but they do have that ability, which is why I think when Spock throws the carrot and he says, and Hemmer catches it, he says, well, you telepathically sent your throw, and that's because he can communicate telepathically with Spock, which I think is really cool. And I hope they do build upon that at a later date. And
yeah,
I have
can I just say one thing about that, Jim? So I was just going to say, so regarding these Enar, like you said, we don't know a ton about them. Everything we know from Enterprise, and we know that not only do they have these sort of telepathic abilities, but they have a precognitive ability, right? Because the whole storyline with them in Enterprise was that they were using this race of people to control these Romulan drone ships that that were able to evade and shoot and that kind of stuff more effectively than any human pilot, because they could actually predict the movements of the pilots. And so I'm really interested to see, I know we've just kind of mentioned it here, but how his kind of precognitive abilities become part of the story, because it kind of feels like that's a tool now in Pike's tool belt, right? He could be like, hey, Hemmer, what do you think? And Hemmer's like, somebody about to shoot us, or, you know, we might get those sorts of things. So I'm excited to see how that develops.
You know, I think the next song we're going to have to work on is Hemmer Time. So
yeah, there you go. Well,
there you go.
And I have to tell you, there's this great scene between Jamal from Enterprise and Shran where they're talking to each other. And, you know, it's after what you were just talking about, Jim, where they're talking about the myth of the Enar. And she says, you know, I've never met a blue skin. And he says, you're blind. How can you tell my skin's blue? And she says, don't ask me to explain. I was never very good at science. And he says, neither was I.
Yeah,
Shran
is great.
They can tell colors even though they're blind, man. There you go.
Yep. I love it. I'm really looking forward to taking the journey with Hemmer and having more Hemmer time. All right. Well, I got the last clip here, and this was just a fun one that I wanted to throw in here. And it's called "You're Just Toying With Me." If I can find it, where did it go? There it is.
The surface of the comet is bombarded by ridiculously high levels of cosmic rays. This will buy you 2 hours. Any more, and your insides will turn to liquid.
Ow! You could have warned me.
Didn't even know it was gonna hurt. I've had people run on me.
Weapon up, people. Kirk, Avera, when you're recovered with me. You ready for this?
I'm more than capable of managing any pain you can induce.
You're fucked. Now you're just toying with me.
That was not my intention.
I've noticed.
Heads up!
So, first of all, I love Chapel. I really like the way they're building this character. I think she's awesome. She's becoming my favorite character on the show, next to the awesome dumb man of Anson Mount. We know this already, but I'm really liking Chapel. And I wanted to throw that clip in there because Chapel and Spock always had this, well, not Spock so much, but Chapel always had this attraction to Spock. And I'm glad that they're building on that in this series because we know that it exists. And just to see that little interaction there, I chuckled and I thought it was great. And the other thing that I liked about the scene is we see people running around with hypo sprays, like it's like in every other episode of Star Trek, and we never see that it hurts. Well, guess what? It does, because Uhura even says so. And I thought that was a great little touch to throw in there. So I just wanted to play that clip for you guys. And
yeah. Jim,
it's great.
I mean, to me,
it's great.
To me, this Nurse Chapel is the most kind of like J.J. Abrams, Kelvin timeline type of character that we have. And I think it has something to do with Paul's comment on the way that they're writing her syntax and how she uses kind of colloquial language and stuff. But why doesn't it bother me? I am totally with you. I love this character. I love her energy. I love that she feels like sort of super young and like go-getter. And she has this wit about her that I feel like even the Majel Barrett character didn't have back in the day. So to me, they're taking this character to new strange worlds, and I like where they're taking her.
Her very relatable
yeah.
For some reason. She's just, it's like, you know, I would run into her at a local comic book shop and just sit down and talk with her about Batman or something, and she'd be right there. She just seems like, you know, approachable to me. I just like the way they're writing her. I don't know if you guys saw the picture I posted on our Trek Talking page, but there's a picture of them in between takes, and Nurse Chapel is laying inside the eye beams of sickbay with her legs up in the like a cat. And I don't know if you guys saw that picture or not, but if you didn't, go and check it out. And it's just, I just love what she's doing with the character and the way they're writing her. I like her. So I wanted to play that clip for you guys and talk a little bit about
it. Let's try this. The slightly crazy girl next door. A little for our modern times, a little hippie-ish.
Yeah, I just like her.
She's approachable.
You know, I think that she's the girl next door. She's not a Seven of Nine in a body hugging cat suit, but she's very she comes across very feminine, which is not a bad thing at all, not a negative thing at all. She's attracted to Spock, which we know that she was on TOS. I'm just waiting for her to make him some Vulcan Plemic soup and have him throw it at her. But I just like her character.
Yeah, I think the through line that that she's taking with the character is that, well, obviously this is an actor who's super charismatic, right? But the through line I'm seeing with Chapel is that she's playful, right? She has, you know, she'll have a little badinage with people, right? And she'll bandy about a bit, and she doesn't just do the business at hand. She kind of has to say something to see if they'll play back, right? She's always trying to make that extra comment. And it's a good contrast when you have another character like La'an Noonien Singh, right, who's super haunted, and she's like, when you bitches have recovered, weapon up, yes. Right? She's pretty hardcore, and she's pretty, you know, she's always going to have that veneer of drama. And so, you know, and it's nice to have that foil there. So I think playing the playful side is good. It'll be interesting to get to know her better and find out what's beyond that. But yeah, she's just super playful, you know. And
again,
the characters are well done.
I like her. I like her a lot.
All right, guys. Keep in mind, this is the younger version of Majel, so she's going to have a lot of more of an experience of what she has in TOS. So she's going to act a lot differently than the TOS version.
Well, and the Majel Barrett didn't, like, as Nurse Chapel, she's most often put into a position where she's like, yes, doctor, and she goes and she gets stuff. Like, there are a handful of episodes where they kind of take her character and develop it just a little tiny bit in TOS. So it's nice that they have that freedom now in Strange New Worlds to take her further.
Yeah, absolutely. So, David, I'm gonna swing the spotlight right back on you, buddy. So on a scale of 1 to 10, we've heard the clips, we've all talked about it. You heard what the fans thought. The fans gave it an 8.8. Where are you on the scale of 1 to 10, David?
I really like this episode. I am definitely gonna give this a 10. I know that my last week score was 15. I kind of went a little crazy with that because I was so excited about it. But, this is definitely a 10 for me because, for one, I enjoyed this one a lot more than I thought I would when it came to the record of how Star Trek series from, like, Picard and on, or even Discovery and on, you know, they started out really good at the beginning and then they're slowly kind of, like, downhilling from there, and I'm hoping that this series does not do that, because with this episodic stuff, with the original Star Trek is supposed to be like, this is what I enjoy about Star Trek, and I'm really hoping they keep that from going downhill from here on out, because yeah, this episode, even though, yes, last week was 15, that was originally supposed to be 10, but, you know, I'm going to give it a 10 still, because I'm still enjoying what they're doing, and I hope that it continues.
Excellent. So we got a 10 from the first person in Portland. Let's go to the second person in Portland. How about you, Paul?
Well, I'm holding it up just to everything that I've seen since Paramount Plus kind of came into the picture here. There's parts I've liked of all the different franchises and parts I haven't. But I think these guys I feel like they've prepped way hard and they really did their homework and they have carefully thought this through, and it shows, and there's a lot of fealty to the past, but willing to go in some interesting new directions, right? So I'm so well cast, so, you know, right now it just comes across as just such a breath of fresh air. You know, there's no one sobbing and crying and, you know, over navel gazing, and there's just none of that, right? It's just it's lean, and it's engaging, it's fun. The fun part, I don't think you can emphasize that enough. It's freaking fun to watch this show, right? And so for me, it gets a 10. I mean, I think they're on a great, you know, start to things. I cannot believe that it's 6:15 in the evening and I still haven't had a chance to watch today's new episode yet. So I'm super excited when we're done here and everyone's put to bed.
I haven't watched it yet either.
I can't wait to watch
three
that tonight.
Times.
Really looking forward to
it. I've watched it already.
It's going to be terrific, but just life got too busy here today, man. So I love what they're doing. I love the kind of vibe where it's like every episode we kind of rotate the focus on a different character a little bit more, right? We have last week it was Uhura that we got to spend a little more time with, right? And I think I know who we're spending a little bit more time with tonight, which is going to be interesting. So super excited to see where they go. It's just a real treat to be getting this served up on a weekly basis. And I love this, you know, it's like we had no idea last week, right, that we were going to be meeting the Shepherds and see this whole new alien race, right? That's great. And we've got a bunch more episodes to go, so I'm super excited to see what other new things are coming that we don't know about yet, you know? So it's just all the surprises. It's going to be very delightful. And I know we got a big Spock-centric episode, teeing you up for Monday, Jim, coming up in a couple weeks. It's going to be very Spock-focused. I'm super looking forward to that and seeing where they go in Mr. Spock's mythology. So bring it on, baby. I'm delighted.
And wrapping up our Portland crew so far, we got 10 out of 10. We have Eric. Eric, what do you think?
Super good episode. Definitely dug the storyline. Definitely dug the aliens. I'm totally on board with this show. I think it's going really, really good right now. I will say, Paul, that I am happy that we have this type of show versus the types of shows that do have people crying every week and that sort of thing, because I am not against that type of Star Trek either. So
I'm not
as,
either.
As I like this type of Star Trek, I always try to not disparage the other Star Trek that's coming out right now, because I think it's all really, really good. So I give this episode a 9.2.
No round numbers for you. A point, huh?
9.2.
It's always a point for me. This is definitely not 10, but it feels higher than a 9 to me. I mean, to me, in recent Star Trek memory, to me, the Discovery for season 4 finale was a 10. And so I'm measuring everything else against that. So I gave Strange New World premiere a 9.5, gave this week 9.2. So that's pretty close.
That is, excellent. That is consistency.
The spice of life variety.
That's right. And that brings us right back to Las Vegas. How about you, Charles?
I'm questioning why Eric, quit with the mental stuff. Stay out of reading my notes while I'm writing them. I gave last week a 9.4. Last week, let's say a 9.4 was a 9.5. I gave it a 9.5. I decided to back off just a little bit this week and going at a 9.2. Now, one thing that they did end with this episode that I thought was rather perfect, I love the philosophical question on the end. Well, yes, we moved the comet, but the comet didn't really change.
Yeah.
But Spock helped. Yeah, this is kind of maybe where the comet was going to go, and maybe the comet was expecting Spock to help him do that change.
Yes.
Does
you're right,
this
Charles.
Race play a little bit with time?
This is playing with that whole idea that Pike is dealing with in the show right now of predestination, right? It's like, is my fate sealed? Or, and so the question to me in this episode is, was the Enterprise crew on this path where they had to do this thing because that's the way that it was always supposed to be? Is just like fascinating to me. And you put that
exactly.
up against, and you put that against the aliens here from this episode that 100% believe that this thing is going to do what it's going to do because it is prophesied that it's going to do it. Okay, so what happens when the scientists, like, they observe something that exactly falls in line with that? Does that throw their science out of whack? Or does it make them just kind of look inside themselves just a little bit and say, maybe I am part of something bigger? I think that's the message that Pike's getting here. Like, you know, maybe I am part of a bigger thing even though my fate is sealed. I like that.
Yep.
All right. That leaves
Jim
to bring up the caboose. And I love Anson Mount. He's the man. But I got to say that, you know, I prefer the way Discovery and Picard are. I'm not really digging this episodic thing. I think it's a step backwards from what Star Trek could be. Case in point is Spock and the asteroid. What was that all about? They never told you what he was doing. We never saw
him. They totally, I think you guys missed something. If we don't understand what was going on, when Spock...
Well, I watched it four times trying to catch it,
But they come up with a plan ahead of time, and then they, you know, at one point, Pike is like, okay, Spock, it's your turn. And then Spock says, I'm diverting all my power to shields, and he talks about how he's using his heat shield. So essentially what he does is he sends a ton of power to his shields, heats them up, and as he drives across the surface of the planet, that heat is what starts to break the thing apart, which is what causes it to stray off course.
Oh, I understand that, because I watched it several times before I brought my point up, is that he just shows up in the shuttle. We don't see the shuttle leave. We don't hear the plan. They're being chased, and all of a sudden there's a shuttle on this bottom of this asteroid while they're being shot at by the Shepherds. And for a show that's streaming that doesn't have to be a certain amount of minutes long, they could have had a line or two or explained something to, you know, why Spock was there, how Spock got there, what was the plan in the first place, you know, that whole thing. And then there's another scene earlier in the episode where they're on the asteroid, and the next thing they're all on the bridge in their uniforms, and it's like seconds later, and we never see them. We never see them come back or do anything. They're just on the bridge. And to me, with a show like this, there's no need for stuff like that to happen when they could have just beamed them up and showed them walking out of the transporter room, but they didn't.
Yeah, I gotta disagree though, man.
Wow,
it's just like,
yeah.
That's so, it's like the old fashioned way of storytelling though, right? It's just like, we know that, we've seen that. And I like the fact that the show doesn't feel to slow down the pace by, it's like, okay, doctor walks into the room, closes the door. Hello, I'm your patient. I'm your doctor patient. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. Good. Let's look at your test results. Instead, the scene starts with the doctor going, you have cancer. Right? They get right into it right away. And it's not all the show the doctor get out of his car. We know how they're going to do all that stuff. And I think that they're just trying to minimize the exposition. There is so much exposition in science fiction, man. It just drags things down and slows it down and kind of dilutes a lot of the fun out of the storytelling sometimes. And they're just gambling with taking the perspective here that the audience is going to be able to figure it out and not slow things down with gumming it up, right?
If you skip the doctor scene and we go to the patient dying on the bed, and we have no idea why they're dying, what they're doing there, what anything, it becomes lazy storytelling.
Well, does it matter how he got on the shuttle? What matters is that he was on the shuttle and he drove the shuttle and he broke the comet apart. I mean, Pike says that he's got a plan. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it does matter is what I'm saying, because if they're just going to write a story trope like that and just have something happen with no explanation, you know, where did he get the idea? They're just going to put him there and it's just going to happen. If this is the way they're going to write the stories from this point on, I'm worried. I'm concerned, because Paul just said it's like old Star Trek, but it's not the 60s anymore. It's not the 80s anymore. It's not the 90s anymore. You know, we want stories that are complicated. We want stories that are in depth. We want stories that tell a good story. And this story was absolutely spectacular up until Spock shows up on a shuttle. That's where it lost me. But at any rate, so that's it. That's it, guys. I just wanted to say that. And that's my take on it. I'm going to give this episode an 8, in my opinion. But before we go, I want to ask you guys this. Do you like doing the episodes with the sound bites? What do you think, Paul?
It was interesting. I thought it was okay. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of not having a rigid formula that is always what we do. So people listening know what to expect. It's just like, then it's just like, oh, this is this thing. I know I can tune out here because it's like convention calendar or whatever. All right. If it's a little more unpredictable, I think that keeps the audience intrigued. Right. So maybe mix it up. 1 week, try this. 1 week, try this. And I think it keeps us creative.
What do you think, David? Did you like the soundbite thing?
Yeah. I kind of agree with Paul. I like to mix it up.
All right. Eric, what do you think? You like the sound bites?
Yeah, it's all good, man.
We used to do sound bites, and then we got away from it. What about you, Charles?
I think I agree with the guys. The variation. We can do sound clips sometimes, maybe not. Just see what our mood is.
See what happens.
I think I made the comment with the chat. You need to get the sound bites a little louder. They were a bit soft.
All right. Well, guys, believe it or not, that wraps up our show. Can't believe it. It just flies right by. But as Paul said, we are going to be back with you on Monday night. We're going to do an iGrok Spock show, which is going to be interesting. We're going to talk all about Mr. Spock. That's right. Our resident alien from TOS. And we're going to dive deep. There's been a lot more people that have played him than just Leonard Nimoy. So we're going to talk about that on Monday night, same bat time, same bat channel. So make sure you set your calendars and join us on Monday night. And before we go, I want to say thank you so much to our trifecta from Portland. We'll start off with David. Thank you for hanging out with us in Trek Talking tonight, David.
Yeah, that was fun. Stay out of trouble.
Oh, I'm going to try. And, of course, thank you so much to our very own Paul the Line Guy. Thanks for hanging out and Trek Talking with us tonight, Paul.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you so much for hosting this amazing fun time.
And there's more to come. And also, thank you so much to our very own Eric, also from Portland, for hanging out and Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely, guys. This is one of my favorite parts of the week every week. So thanks a bunch.
And I think I'm going to have to start working on Hemmer Time. We don't know enough about him yet, but I got an idea forming. So maybe you guys will hear Hemmer Time one of these days on Trek Talking. Who knows? And last but not least, thank you to our Las Vegas connection, none other than Charles. Thank you for hanging out and Trek Talking with us, Charles.
Thank you. Looking forward to Star Trek and always leads me into my Friday.
And it's great, isn't
Thanks,
it?
Sir.
And I want to let you guys know that next week we're going to talk about The Ghost of Ilaria, which is the episode that was on tonight, which I've already watched 3 times. So we're going to talk about that next Thursday. So I'm Uncle Jim saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe it. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Live long and prosper.
Cheers, friends. Be well.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.